From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today on the show, we speak with Pardeep Singh Kalika, the new executive director of the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee.
Even when you say interfaith, you're almost accepting and saying, okay, there are other faiths out there. And if we can build that subconscious, I think we can succeed.
Then Ana Martinez-Ortiz joins us to talk about some of the top community events happening in Milwaukee this month. And Irish guitarist Shane Hennessy says the way he composes music might be unexpected.
When I start writing any kind of music, the guitar is nowhere near me. And the reason is that I figured out very early on that if I wrote on the guitar, A, it sounded like I was writing a guitar tune as opposed to a piece of music. And B, my hands wanted to do what they already knew how to do.
Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee brings together regional leaders from 20 faith denominations. The idea is to establish dialogue, build relationships, and create programs that champion social issues to help create a better society for everyone. The organization turns 50 next year, and for the past decade, it's been led by Tom Heinen. Now the Interfaith Conference is under new leadership. Pardeep Singh Kalika became its new executive director in June. Kalika has always been of service to his community. He's been a police officer, an educator, a counselor, and a trauma therapist. He also co-founded the organization Serve to Unite. Kalika joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio shortly after his appointment to talk about his new role at the Interfaith Conference. He begins by reflecting on his first memories of the organization.
I got introduced to the Interfaith Conference shortly after the August 5th attack in 2012. And I just noticed a lot of the work that they were doing and the different denominations that they were bringing together and bringing to the table to counter what happened that day. But since then, I've really been working to counter hate attacks, that happen all over the United States and sadly now across the world. And I just really admired what they were doing. Through that process, really developed a friendship with Tom Heinen, the executive director of Interfaith Conference. And over the past couple of years, he started to allude to basically retiring, and we were both in Toronto together at the World Parliament of Religions, and Tom and his wife, Katie, we were sitting at dinner together one evening, and she said that Tom was basically serious about retiring and that I should think about applying for the position. Now, within that time frame, people say a lot of things and say that you should do this, and I really didn't think of myself as basically an executive director for anything, or really over the past 7 years, I don't think I've held a job where I had to show up to work. So that was going to be kind of different, but really just her saying that and encouraging me to do that is what once the position came open, I really took it as a spiritual undertaking. A lot of times we look at the work that we do as simply a job or something that you do as a career, but I'm really finding out since I've been an executive director of Interfaith that this is really a spiritual calling, and then I've just been following that spirit basically for the past 7 years, but really since the last 3 weeks.
Your father founded the Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Satwan Singh Kalika. Did you ever imagine that you yourself would someday take on a leadership position also associated with religion and faith? Growing up with your father in that role, did you always think like, oh, I never want to do this?
Yeah. Growing up, and both of my parents, my mom and my dad, are very devout. And I don't know if they're just devout to Sikhi, but they're really devout to faith and spirituality and the role that your religion plays in the way that you navigate life. And I saw them go to the Gurdwara probably 4 to 5 days a week, sometimes every day of the week. And I never thought to myself that I'm going to grow up and really embrace the role of like religion or organized religion. I didn't see myself doing that. And, with that said, I have always been very spiritually driven, and I think even as a police officer or as an educator, as a therapist, as a counselor, I never wanted to do something that was going to take me to a place where I did it for money, or I didn't do it for a reason that wasn't of service. And so I think when we think about spirituality, sometimes as a child we think about religion and we oftentimes don't connect that to service and to say, well, you know what, you can be of service to people within your own community or congregation or church or synagogue or mosque or masjid or gurdwara, but how do you become of service to people outside of that? Maybe there was a part of me that didn't see how those two things connected until August 5th, and I saw communities come together and really just bear witness and promise to build a future that was better than the one that happened that day.
Do you think that is maybe one of the misconceptions people have, or just something people aren't educated about when it comes to interfaith organizations or just acts of service, whether you're involved in a specific group or not? Because most people, no matter what their experience with organized religion, perhaps they think they are servicing their spheres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there is misunderstanding as far as the role that religion plays in people's lives. One of the new undertakings that Interfaith has taken on is really the role of faith within workplaces. And we've just had this discussion yesterday, and Rockwell Automation has really pioneered the role of people's faith and how they show up at work through their program called Faith Friendly Allies. And even within the conversation with Rockwell, you started to notice that many of the people who work at Rockwell think of this group as sort of a Bible-thumping group. And that's kind of what we've gotten as far as, like, is Interfaith Conference are we teaching you about religion? And that's not the case. What we're teaching you is how people navigate their life by the spiritual belief that they have. And that's different. So as to say, well, party, if you have difficult times, how much of your faith helped you get through those difficult times, rather than me telling you what sick he is, or when you had to forgive somebody that hurt you, how did your Christian beliefs help you navigate forgiveness? And that's kind of the way that we want people to think about faith within the West. And I say this, you know, lovingly of the West, is that I think a lot of times there's a separation between church and state, and that needed to be the case, and that probably still needs to be the case. But with that said, within the global conversation, a lot of religions cannot separate themselves from their culture. So when somebody says to me, well, can't you just separate Sikhi and just show up to work as a person, as an employee? And I would say to you, a lot of people can't. When Ramadan is happening, there's a lot of our Muslim brothers and sisters who might, you know, that day feel fatigued because they haven't eaten. And if the employer doesn't understand, well, this is the month of Ramadan and this is the observance of the faith and this is why that is happening, those employees might be punished for just observing their faith. And so there's a lot of people's faith that just plays a role within their life on a day-to-day basis, and they can't separate themselves. So now we need to not, previously we used to think, okay, let's just all be colorblind. Let's just think that we're all the same. Well, people aren't all the same, and now the way that we're going to think about it in the future is that people's faiths and people's races and people's, just who they are and what they're made of plays a role in their life. So let's educate ourselves about those things.
What other issues do you see as your main priority to tackle in this new role?
One of the conversations that keeps happening is protecting places of worship. You know, about a month ago, we had a security and safety symposium that brought together law enforcement communities, our different faith denominations, communities outside of faith denominations who are really concerned about how do they protect their own place of prayer. And how do they help protect other people's place of prayer? We know that nationally and internationally, hate attacks are up. against places of prayer. So that's a very real need. With that said, there's a lot of groups out there that will use that fear and manipulate that fear to basically create a dialogue around nationalism and Islamophobia and almost use people's angst against them. A group like that showed up in Waukesha and they sent out a flyer, and this flyer basically talked about that they were going to teach people on how to protect places of prayer. Now, it wasn't officially sanctioned, but people don't understand that. They don't know that. And so when they show up at this rally in Waukesha, they will be observing their First Amendment rights to free speech, but the free speech will be laced in a lot of hate speech. And this hate speech, whether we like it or not, is putting people in danger. The hate speech that's coming out of the White House is putting people in danger. We see threats up against Congresswoman Omar. This is a very real thing. And, you know, a term that we call stochastic terrorism means that we have to be careful on how we stoke that fire and who suffers the consequences of that hate.
What role do you see Milwaukee's faith leaders playing in this going forward? Because I imagine, obviously, many issues have probably come across the table of the Interfaith Conference over its nearly 50-year history. But as you mentioned today, rhetoric resurgence and hostile rhetoric is ever more present.
Yeah. You know, our 20 faith adjudicatories is what we call them. You know, when you are involved in interfaith, you're already kind of involved in a semi-progressive sort of way of life where you don't see and say, okay, you know what, how can we work together? We might not all necessarily agree, but we have to agree to disagree, and we have to be part of these conversations. And I see all of our faith leaders really coming to the table with open hearts and open minds to say, okay, this is how it looked historically, and this is what we did. And how can we serve and really be part of the subconscious of Milwaukee and the greater Milwaukee area? And I see really interfaith's role as I want people to know interfaith as much as they know the other big nonprofits in Milwaukee, is because when you say interfaith, you're almost accepting and saying, okay, there are other faiths out there. And if we can build that subconscious, I think we can succeed. Our faith leaders are phenomenal. We got faith leaders from the Hindu Temple of Wisconsin, Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, the Christian community, the Muslim community, the Jewish community, the Buddhist community. Really, it's the role of these faith leaders to stand up in solidarity. And hopefully it's my role to be able to empower them to do so.
Do you see this as very much a trickle-down effect, because it's the leaders of faith communities that can then help to not necessarily undo influence their congregations of whatever faith they practice, but I would imagine it's easy to convince faith leaders to be involved in some sort of organization like this, but when it comes to the lay people, you know, their communities, how are you trying to foster people from the ground up to see this perspective of interfaith, of being interconnected with not just the religious communities, but the greater Milwaukee community?
You know, that's a great question. And the thing is, you know, I speak from a sense of, and I'm going to say this from a bit of privilege, of not being deported, of being an American citizen. Yes, I was a naturalized citizen, but I say this from a sense of privilege that I think the rhetoric that is coming out of the White House and really the political rhetoric that exists is an opportunity. And, you know, I see each one of these statements that comes out and says, okay, well, if you don't agree with us, go back to the country you came from. That is something that's been at the underpinnings of my experience for my entire life, that people would say, okay, somehow, some way, patriotism is all about conforming. And to say, well, no, maybe we have to reexamine patriotism and what patriotism looks like. Does it look like conforming and saying, okay, you know what, we're just going to go along to get along? Or is patriotism really actively challenging and saying, we need to help get to a better place for all of God's children? And this is a special place that faith leaders can navigate. You know, Sunday services, people come in, or Saturday services, people come in, Thursday services, people come in, and they come in with open hearts and open minds and are vulnerable. You know, you don't get that type of vulnerability within other situations. Other times, people are pretty superficial. They talk about the Packer game, they talk about the weather, they almost want to keep it light. Even within corporate settings, we want to keep it light because we don't want to get into the heavy issues of how do you feel? How did that statement make you feel? Do your children feel welcomed? So when people are coming in with these types of concerns, we can be spiritually driven, and we are spiritual creatures. We want to understand something that's beyond our understanding. And that type of curiosity takes you to a place that you might not ever get to a solid truth, but maybe the process is where the solutions really lie. And to say, we engage in this.
What is the simplest thing that people can do to help bridge these gaps?
I mean, people just can have conversations and listen to one another, really. It's the over-explaining sometimes of things, of feelings. It really negates somebody's feelings. Because if you go to somebody and say, you know what, because the president made these comments, I feel like this. And somebody says, well, you know what, you're okay. Everything's fine with you. You should just, I mean, you enjoy your life. Your kids are, you know, that gets you to a place where it's like you're over-explaining the feeling of racism. You're over-explaining the feeling of rejection. And I think it's just, there's times, I mean, it calls upon us to really open our hearts and say, okay, I'm listening for understanding rather than judgment. And that, yes, that's a paradigm shift to say, you know, because, you know, we have become very judgmental. But I think that's what's needed right now. And, you know, come back to like the interfaith conversations. We have a program where we engage in these types of conversations with different people from different faiths. Amazing Faiths Dinner is what it's called. And Medical College of Wisconsin did a study and helped us do a study. But the participants of the Medical College research project, out of, I think it was about 100 people, 60% of them never had a dinner with somebody of a different faith and actually sat down and listened the role of that faith and how that helps them navigate their life. And I just think that's a huge number. There's a book called The Big Sort. And it really talks about how even before, you know, we've siloed ourselves on the internet, but really this book talks about how we've siloed ourselves within neighborhoods to move around like-minded people. And how that gets away from actively challenging our own biases and mindsets. And I think it's time to come back and say, okay, you know what? Let's test some of those. What have I siloed myself into? And just, you know, to come back and really just start to listen for understanding.
Well, Pardeep Sinclair, thank you so much for coming in to talk about this. And I wish you the best of luck on this new journey.
Thank you, Audrey.
Pardeep Singh Kalika is the executive director of the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee. He was appointed in June, and he spoke with us shortly after that. There's more information about him and the conference's work at WUWM.com. And we would like to welcome you to day one of our fall membership drive. I am joined in studio right now with Bonnie North and Audrey Nowakowski.
Hey, Joy.
Hello.
Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, yeah. Well, and thank you.
I had to come a long way.
So. You did. And we're so glad that you made the trip. We're asking for your support right now for interviews just like what we just heard with Audrey did with Pardeep Singh Kalika. I mean, those are the kinds of bread and butter things that you get nowhere else on the radio dial in Milwaukee or southeastern Wisconsin. And it's really, really simple to support it. Audrey, what do you do?
You can simply call 414-227-3210. Or if you are by computer at work, wherever you might be, you can go online to wuwm.com/give. Just hit the donate button. Easy steps. It takes less than 3 minutes of your day to contribute to great public radio like this. And, you know, with interviews with Pardeep, we've all spoken with him a few times over the years. And Lake Effect is a place where you can come to time and again where you can really get the full scope of the relationships we've established with either organizations in Milwaukee, people in Milwaukee, you know, like we've talked with Pardeep since the Sikh temple shooting all the way up to now in his new leadership position. So I think that's also a unique thing that you're not going to find anywhere else on your dial.
One of the amazing things about WUWM is that we not only bring you conversations that are from local leaders like Pardeep Singh Kalika, we also bring you conversations that are national. We bring you conversations that are international with the BBC. When you turn to WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, you're not only hearing about the things that are happening in your backyard, you're hearing about the things that are happening in the world. And we can only get that radio to you with your support. So please call us. The number is 414-227-3210. You can always go to our website. It's wuwm.com/give.
And we are looking for 5 new members this hour in Lake Effect. If you've been listening for a while and you haven't yet become a member of this public radio service, it is a perfect time to do so. And if you can afford a $120 gift, or that's $10 a month, we have a coffee mug to offer you. Anyone who makes that contribution of $120 a month in one time or $10 a month, we'll get this terrific coffee mug. It's the first time we've done this. We haven't offered this in a very, very long time.
The last mugs we have are from UWM at 10.
Yeah, so that's at least
this.
12 years ago. And so if you've been waiting for that next installment, here's the time. And it's a beautiful kind of curved black mug with a bright white interior. And it says, it has our logo on it, of course, and it says, "Start your day the public radio way." And the way you do that, Joy, is calling.
Call 414-227-3210. You can head to our website, wuwm.com/give. Coming up next, we'll look at some of the community events in Milwaukee this October. You're listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers. There's so much to do in Milwaukee during October that it can be a little overwhelming sorting through the variety of community events. Luckily, Milwaukee's own Ana Martinez-Ortiz is on top of it. Martinez-Ortiz is a community engagement reporter for the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service, and she joins us now to talk about some of the exciting things happening this month. Ana, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You guys have a list of different events, and you've been joining us to talk about a number of these different events, kind of the standouts. And I think people are going to be at least familiar with the Milwaukee Film Festival, but you guys suggest going to a specific program inside of that festival.
Right. So Cine Sin Fronteras, which translates to Films Without Borders, is kind of like an organization within Milwaukee Film Festival, but their films specifically cover stories from like Chicanx, Latin America, Indigenous, and Afro-Latinx communities. And so they look a little bit more at like family and history and identities. And so on Thursday, October 10th, Cine Sin Fronteras is having their kickoff party. And they're going to be showing some of the trailers for the upcoming films and the highlights for what this Cine Sin Fronteras season has in store.
Do we know what those films are?
Yeah, so some of the films are The Infiltrators, which is a documentary and also part reenactment. And it follows a group of dreamers who are thrown into a for-profit detention center and kind of how they handle the situation. And it's about activism. Another one is Sueño Florian Polis, which is about a family who goes on vacation. They live in Argentina, and they go to a beach vacation in Brazil. And it's kind of, they called it a dramedy of how they kind of miscommunicate and just how it turns into everyone kind of finds themselves and comes together in the end.
Nice. Yeah. So the other event, this is an annual event from the Greater Milwaukee Foundation. And I think some people might be familiar with it, but it's a concept that's really built on unity.
Right. So it's called On the Table. And this is their third year doing it. And I just took the description from the website because it's much more succinct than I could do it. But it says, throughout the region on a single day, participants gather to share a meal, talk about topics that matter in their community, and put their ideas in motion to improve the quality of life in Greater Milwaukee. So the idea is that people throughout the region can host a table or join a table, and they invite friends, families, coworkers, whoever, to share ideas on any given topic. And they do give some topics that you can use. So some of them are like healthcare, youth criminal justice, arts and recreation, racial equity, mental health. I mean, anything you can imagine pretty much goes. But the hope is that they have these conversations and come up with some ideas to start fostering change in Milwaukee.
Well, and the idea, if I'm correct, is that you bring in people who may share your ideas, but specifically people who don't have the same ideas as you, people who might be on the other side of the aisle of you politically, perhaps religiously, but people who are bringing in different things to that table.
Right. And that's really the beauty of it, is that everyone's kind of coming from a different perspective and that you're sharing a meal together to discuss it. So it's all meant to be, you know, in good faith, and hopefully people can have a civil conversation, and you know, maybe they walk away and they come to a new understanding. Maybe they still disagree, but to still have that conversation is really important.
And hopefully it doesn't end in a food fight.
Yeah. Though it might be some fun for some people, but yeah, fingers crossed. But yeah, so several organizations are doing it, like the Sierra Club is hosting one called Green Cities and Environmental Justice and Equity. Next door, Northwestern Mutual have one, and they'll be watching No Small Matter, which is a documentary and discussing childhood education. So it ranges, and it's a great opportunity for people to come together.
So the next event in our list is Botanica Galactica Night Market. For those who maybe have never been to a night market, although we have many in Milwaukee, what is that?
It's basically like a day market, but at night. And it's a different concept just because it is at night. So people might, you know, have a little more fun. There's music, there's dancing, there's food. So again, very similar, just something, putting a twist on the traditional market. And I think it gives people who work during the day an opportunity to check out something at night. So it's fun. And the Botanica Galactica Night Market, or the Bota Gala Night Market, as they're calling it, happens on Thursday, October 17th. It's in Walker's Point, and the Botanica Galactica is a store, and their mission is to foster wellness and creativity and community. And so they have a lot of Latinx artists and local makers, and so you can go and check it out. They're going to have music, and it's all about having fun and coming together.
Event number four. A similar idea. It's coming together, creating community, the Hunting Moon Powwow.
Yeah, the Hunting Moon Powwow, which is being hosted by the Potawatomi tribe, starts October 18th, and it's going to run through the 20th. And so it's a powwow, but they're going to also have dance competitions and drum competitions, and it's free and open to the public. So anyone can show up, even if you're not Native American, and they kind of encourage that so you can get a new appreciation for Native American culture and tradition, singing and drumming and dancing. And the cool part of it is that it's going to be held downtown. So it's going to be an event that's rich in tradition, but, you know, surrounded by downtown, which is something we don't always see.
And we're, well, of course, all of Wisconsin is on traditionally Native lands, but we are in an area that is so integral to the history of so many tribes in Wisconsin.
For sure. So it's really exciting. I think sometimes we do a disservice to Native Americans, and so we always see, you know, we think, oh, Native American, and you might think immediately of the casino, but it's so much more than that. And so joining the Hunting Moon Powwow is a great way to just explore Native American tradition and maybe learn something that you didn't know before.
Taking a kind of step back into the Latinx community. You have a couple events here that are all around the Dia de los Muertos, also known as Halloween here, although decidedly a different kind of, I don't know, it's because it's not the same holiday, but it's around the same idea.
For sure. They're very similar. So Halloween is more our tradition here in the United States, but Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, as it's translated, is a Mexican celebration and tradition, and it honors the dead, essentially. And so it's a beautiful tradition and celebration. You know, the movie Coco is based off of it, so it's really cool. But there's several events happening in Milwaukee. There used to be a Dia de los Muertos parade, which our photographer Sue Vliet covered. They didn't have it last year, but if you guys are curious, you know, go to our website and see the photo galleries because it's beautiful what they do. But two of the events that are happening to celebrate Dia de los Muertos, the first is an ofrenda exhibit. So as part of the tradition, families will have an altar in somewhere in their house, and there's usually a photo of the deceased person. And among other things, they're called ofrendas or offerings. And so it might be pan de muertos, which is bread, marigolds, maybe an item that was a favorite item of the person who passed away. And so Café Con Arte and Latino Arts is going to have an ofrenda exhibit. So you can go in, see people's ofrendas, and there's going to be decorations that are traditionally seen in Mexico throughout Dia de los Muertos. And so that will run through Friday, November 22nd. So you have a while to see it, but it starts Wednesday, October 23rd. And then the Mitchell Park Domes is also joining in on the celebration. They are doing a Dia de los Muertos in the Desert Dome. So that will be a cool opportunity. It's happening Friday, October 25th. And the dome is going to be decorated in candles, marigolds. You can get your face painted. There's going to be characters walking around. There's going to be mariachi music. So, again, it's a really cool tradition. It's very beautiful. So if you've never celebrated it before, if you're curious about it, definitely two events worth checking out.
I'm so curious to know what the Mitchell Park Dome's ofrenda would be.
Oh, me too.
Former plants? Question mark.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's where my mind went. I was like, I don't know, but it's the domes. They'll get creative. So, yeah. You know, you want to go check it out.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing these events with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Anna Martinez-Ortiz is a community engagement reporter for the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. You can find more of our conversations with the Neighborhood News Service at WUWM.com. And I'd like to welcome you right now to our fall membership drive. I'm joined in studio now by Bonnie at North and Audrey Nowakowski, the lovely producers of Lake Effect.
Hey, Joy.
Hello there.
And, you know, I was listening to Anna talk about the kinds of things that are happening in Milwaukee that you might want to either didn't know about it and you might want to take advantage of, or maybe you did know about it and forgot about it. But she represents to me one of our great partnerships that Lake Effect has with other news organizations in the community. You know, together we make us all a little bigger, and we are able to stretch our resources a little farther by getting folks who are in the community doing different things from us to come in and tell us what's going on in a way that we can't do it. But we do that with your support. And right now we're looking for 5 new members during this membership drive. Today is our first day, and we would love to hear from you. Audrey.
You can call 414-227-3210 or go online to wuwm.com/give. And like Bonnie was saying, we have all these partnerships with various media outlets, people that bring us stories that we just physically time-consuming, aren't able to cover, hear from different perspectives throughout the Milwaukee area. And we can bring this to you because you are the public in public radio. We can't make this content without listener support. It is over 80% of the funds that we need to keep shows like Lake Effect going, like Morning Edition, BBC NewsHour, all the things that keep you company throughout your day. And especially with Morning Edition, there's a great thing to have along with your morning newscast with your cup of coffee. You could have it with a WUW mug.
You could have it. Come on, be honest. You could have it during Lake Effect, too. It's 10 o'clock.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have coffee throughout the whole day. Yeah. So any time of day, you need a hot beverage.
Yes.
During this fall member drive, if you give $10 a month or if you want to give a one-time gift of $120 or more, if you're so inclined, we have a black mug with a white interior that will have our logo. And also, we'll say, start your day the public radio way. Or continue your day.
Or continue your day the public radio way.
Keep it going the public radio way. And we can only do that with your support.
414-227-3210 is the number to call. You can go online to wuwm.com/give. And you can also press the donate button on our app. That is even more simple than all of the other things. However you do it, though, the important thing is that you do. And thanks so much.
We're looking for just 5 members this hour, so please call us. The number is 414-227-3210. You can head to our website. It's wuwm.com/give. We're going to take one last break, and then we'll hear some fingerstyle guitar music from Irish musician and composer Shane Hennessy. Lake Effect returns in just a moment on WUWM. Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Hearing guitar virtuoso and composer Shane Hennessy is magical. It's technique, sure. He has it in spades. But his music goes well beyond playing lots of notes, even though Hennessy does manage to have an entire band play through his guitar. You'll hear what we mean in just a moment. The 26-year-old was in town for a slew of performances during Irish Fest this past summer. He found time to stop by the Lake Effect Performance Studio to speak with Bonnie North and share some tunes with us, including this original composition called Effervescence.
So wonderful. Effervescent. Shane Hennessy in the Lake Effect Performance Studio. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. You know, you play with such joy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real passion for me.
I can tell.
Yeah.
You smile, you're in it. And the minute you started playing, you went to another place.
Absolutely, yeah. I always tell people that, you know, I don't get paid to do concerts. I get paid to travel and eat bad food, and I do the concerts for free.
Well, that's a good way to think about it. You rack up all those airline miles.
Exactly,
and, yeah. you came to the guitar rather late, although you're, you know, you're not that old.
No.
But you've been playing since you were four.
Yeah.
But you're so rooted in Irish traditional music. Mm-hmm. This tune sounded like, you know, you were paying homage to that and Chet Atkins.
Exactly.
You were channeling him a little bit.
Oh,
there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Chet Atkins is a musical hero of mine, and I got turned on to him via discovering the music of Tommy Emmanuel. But where the Irish music comes into it for me is, I suppose I started off on the concertina when I was 4 years old. So that was my very first instrument. I learned it in school. And I was taught the concertina primarily by my teachers in school. And then when I was, I think, maybe 8 or 9 years old, I remember my dad used to bring me up to lessons every Monday night, about an hour away from where we lived in Ireland, to Micheál O'Reilly. And Micheál is a kind of a legend in the you know, Irish trad world, as kind of one of the, or if not the top concertina player in the country. So I used to go to lessons with him every Monday night. And then I suppose it was until I did that up until I discovered the guitar. I think I was about 12 years old and I heard James Taylor in a Disney film. I think it was called Remembering the Titans. And there's a scene with a car crash in it. And you hear that famous, the... And I suppose the cool thing about it for me was that it was kind of like my first experience with harmony in music, because if you think about Irish music, the way you usually hear it in a session, you hear melody and you hear rhythm. You don't actually, unless there's a guitar player or like somebody vamping chords, the traditional way of Irish music was very much melody and rhythm, and that's it. So that's the way I learned. And I wasn't into any other kind of music. You know, I wasn't listening to what my friends were listening to on the radio or whatever. I didn't like any of that stuff. All I wanted was hardcore traditional music. And so for me to hear the sound, I was like, oh my God, where are all these beautiful sounds coming from? That's really what kind of spurred me on to kind of jump into exploring what I could do on the acoustic guitar. But definitely having the roots in traditional music was like starting at a huge advantage already. I think people who come from a background where they've learned an kind of an ethnic music tradition, you know, be it any kind of musical background, you know, if it's Irish or if it's like West African music or it could be kind of like Indian classical music, doesn't matter what it is. If you apply that to kind of more modern ideas, you know, taking stuff from the world of jazz or flamenco or classical, it doesn't really matter what it is. If you can bring your identity into that music, that's when you develop your own voice as a musician. Because particularly now in this age where we've got YouTube and we've got every piece of music that's ever been recorded and written at our fingertips for free, it's so hard not to become a copy or a clone of somebody else, you know. And so people who get audiences and people who really move other people with their music, I think, are the people who go out to look for their own voice on an instrument. I mean, you know, you've probably heard hundreds and hundreds of guitar players, but the ones that stand out are the ones that can pick up a guitar and make it sound different to everybody else.
Yeah, it sounds like you. Like, I would not mistake that playing for anyone else.
Yeah, and that's what I strive for. I strive for that in that if you hear me on the radio or if you hear me at a festival in the background or something, you're going to go, ah, that's Shane Hennessy. You know, that's how you know somebody's got their own sound, you know.
So what do you think makes your sound different from, say, other Celtic-based guitarists, fingerstyle guitarists out there? There's a lot of fingerstyle guitarists out there doing interesting things with, you know, the entire instrument becomes a drum as well. Mm-hmm. It's percussive as well as melodic and harmonic. So what do you think your voice is?
I suppose I've drawn on so many musical experiences and I've tried to put them together in a way that I've taken the pieces I like from all those experiences and I tried to do my own thing on the guitar with them. So obviously in that first piece, Effervescent, you hear a huge Chet Atkins, Tommy Emmanuel influence. I think very much the form of my music and sometimes the kind of the melodic, kind of the prominence of the melody is definitely something that I attribute to Irish music, you know. So it's kind of like I'm in between two worlds, you know. There's the Irish and Celtic music side of me, and then there's also the kind of the finger picking, you know, paying homage to the kind of the Chet Atkins era of playing, and I'm somewhere in the middle. And while I'm doing that, I'm also trying to bring in modern music that I like, you know, kind of these advanced jazz chord changes, or I'm trying to bring in these interesting rhythms. I think something we take for granted in Ireland when we learn music the traditional way is that we're exposed to so many difficult concepts from an early age, but we don't think of them as difficult concepts. We just do it. You know, I remember sitting in front of teachers and you'd just literally be given the letters of the notes you had to play, and you just had to feel it. You just had to work it out. So when I'm playing tunes, you know, it's still in my head. I'll just take the cardboard out of here. I'm still thinking in my head, E-A-E-A-B-A-B-G-A-B-E-E-D-B-D-B-A-G-E-D, because that's the way we learned, you know? And that has carried on to all the rest of the music that I now play. So when I'm thinking of melodies in my head, even though I'm thinking of how I want it to feel, I'm also thinking of, oh, well, here's, you know, B, C, D, E flow, you know. It's just something I think that has carried on since I was younger. But my original point was that we get exposed to timings like 9-8, 12-8, 7-8. You know, we have meter changes. We do modal music as well, which is not something that I ever thought about until I started applying it to jazz. And I thought, oh, this is like what we did, you know, with Irish, you know, as we call it, demixed, you know, which is not major or minor. So we get exposed to all this really difficult stuff from a young age, but we just totally take it for granted because we don't know any different.
Right, and you just absorb it and then figure out how you're using it
exactly.
In your music.
And yeah. I think that's the reason that Irish music translates so well.
So when you're writing tunes, you alluded to it a little earlier about, you know, thinking about melodies and pulling all of that mm-hmm. together. What is your process?
I suppose I'm a bit different to other guitar players in that when I start writing any kind of music, the guitar is nowhere near me. Absolutely nowhere. And the reason is that I figured out very early on that if I wrote on the guitar, A, it sounded like I was writing a guitar tune as opposed to a piece of music. And B, my hands wanted to do what they already knew how to do. So I wanted to cut that process out totally. So when I start with a piece of music now, it's often me. I could be walking down the street, I could be in the shower, I could be anywhere, and I'll just start singing to myself, or I'll start beatboxing, or whatever. It doesn't really matter what it is. Anything that I can use to get an idea out or to kind of develop upon an idea, I will use. And I'll use the voice memos on my phone. So, you know, I mean, if you took out my phone now and listened to the voice memos, you'd probably want to put me into the asylum. But it makes sense to me. And I can then use those to refer back to and think, oh, that's what I was thinking. And I try and put things together. Sometimes I'll use a program like Logic on my laptop. Sometimes I'll write it down in plain English on a piece of paper. And then when I feel like I've got enough of a grasp of what I want it to sound like, what the main themes are, then I'll bring it to the guitar. And I try to do a guitar arrangement of that piece. And I think a good example of that is there's a tune on my first album called Avenue. And this was a kind of a typical way for me to write a tune. I remember I was just after coming back from New York for the first time, and I was singing to myself, walking down the avenue, killing time. And the melodic idea went that way. So I then thought, okay, well, okay, so then what would I do if I were directing the band? You know, well, if I had a keyboard player, I'd probably get him to play chords. So I'd get him to play an E minor and an A7. But then when you're doing a guitar arrangement, you're trying not to think of those chords. You're trying to think, what would a keyboard player do? So a keyboard player would do a kind of a tighter voicing. So they'd probably do something more like something like that. And then I start thinking, okay, well, if I had a bass player in the band, what would I ask the bass player to do? And again, you'd follow the root chord, so you'd go E, A. But then you're thinking, well, no, a bass player, I'd want them to move it up, groove it up a bit. So I'd want them to go. Okay, so now we've got these different parts for the band going on. The drummer, I'd want them to keep a really tight. Now it's time to start putting all these things together. So we start with those chords. Now we put in the bass line. Now I want the drummer to get a bit more funky. I want them to put in ghost notes into that groove, right? Which are those little teeny taps that drummers put in. So now the groove without the ghost notes. And the groove with the ghost notes. Now we've got Stevie Wonder, you know? Quincy Jones. And then the melody. So that's
so much fun.
Yeah, that's the process, you know. So I'm not thinking like a guitar player. I'm trying to think like a band leader. I'm trying to think, if I had four musicians in the room, what would I get them to do right now? And how accurately can I represent that on the guitar, or try to recreate that dynamic? You know?
And you don't have to feed the other three guys.
Exactly, yeah.
It's great. You go on tour by yourself.
Can you imagine how much money I'm saving right now?
Amazing. That's a wonderful way to go about it. Uh-huh. Because like I'm going back to what you said earlier, is you want to write a song, a tune, and then do an arrangement of it for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the way to do it. I mean, I've tried before to write on the guitar, but the problem is then you get locked into the same shapes, and I know this lick, I can stick this in here, and, you know, it's not a good way to write, because I don't think you challenge yourself. There's often things that I come up with and I go, how am I going to do this? Oh, God, I've really backed myself into a corner here. But, I mean, that's how you improve. That's how you get better as a musician. And even from a technical point of view, sometimes you come across something and you go, oh, no, here we go. You know, this is the hard part. But you've got to practice it up. And ultimately, it makes you a better musician approaching the guitar that way. You know, and at the end of the day, I'm not trying to appeal to guitar players. I'm trying to appeal to everybody. You know, Chet Atkins always said, I'm not playing to the guitarists, I'm playing to their wives. And it was the truth. It was the truth. He didn't care about whether what he was playing was the most technical, difficult thing, or if it was something simple. As long as the music came out the way he wanted it to feel, well, then he'd done his job. And I think it's the same thing with me. If the music feels right and you know nothing about fingerstyle guitar playing or the solo guitar approach or whatever, that doesn't matter. If you've had a good time and you enjoy it, that's my job done.
Shane Hennessy, what are you going to take us out with?
So years ago in Ireland, my grandfather had a big band, and there was a huge kind of show band, dance band scene in Ireland. And so I grew up listening to a lot of the music that he would have played in the house. And so he was a huge Glenn Miller fan. So I remember shortly after he passed away, I remember hearing American Patrol again for the first time in a long time. And I thought, you know, this would be a really good one to arrange for the guitar. You know, good melodic tune, good chord changes, has all the ingredients for a good arrangement. So I'm going to play that, American Patrol by Glenn Miller.
Irish guitarist and composer Shane Hennessy performing his arrangement of Glenn Miller's American Patrol. We had him as a guest in the Lake Effect Performance Studio this past summer during Irish Fest. You can listen to the complete versions of these songs at WUWM.com. Remember, WUWM.com is also where you can find the donate button. Our fund drive is happening right now, 24/7, so call 414-227-3210 or go online now. And thank you so much for your support. And that's today's edition of the show. I'm Joy Powers. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and please join us again tomorrow at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. It's 11 o'clock, and stay tuned. Fresh air is next.